And now, for the show reflecting on classic radio, Hollywood 360, with your host, Carl Amari.
Who's that strange-looking man behind you?
That's Carl.
I met him at the laundromat.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Sam, sweetheart.
I don't know what to do, Rabbi. Every night he listens to the radio. I can't keep him away. The Lone Ranger, the Shadow, the Master Benger.
This is not good. It tends to induce bad values, false dreams, lazy habits.
Want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
Guys! Guys! Guys!
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio or something?
Hello, everyone. I'm Carl Amari, and this is Hollywood 360, the radio show that presents the best in classic radio. This hour on Hollywood 360, it's the conclusion to Fibber, McGee, and Molly from 1940. Then Paul Lucas stars in Suspense from 1943. By my side is my co-host, Lisa Wolf. Oh, what's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl.
All right, it's time for the conclusion to Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Let's go back to January 16th. 1940, McGee's car is stolen. Here's the conclusion to Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Just got our new license plates, old-timer.
Is that so?
Yep.
Just been getting me a plate, too.
Is that so? License?
Nope.
Dental?
Nope.
Printing?
Nope. Give up?
Yes. What kind of a plate did you get?
Blue.
Well, I certainly fell for that one.
Hey!
You kind of got me there, old-timer. As the suit says, when it was handed down from father to son, it looks like I've been taken in.
That's pretty good, Johnny. But that ain't the way I heard it.
No.
The way I heard it, one feller says to t'other feller, says... Did you see me take that last corner on two wheels? Nope, says t'other feller. Ain't that kind of risky? Not for me, says the first feller. I've been riding this bicycle for years. Hey, slow down and leave me off, kid.
Okay.
Well, much obliged for the lift, Johnny. See you Tuesday.
That old fossil, I'm getting so I feel pretty strongly about meeting him weekly.
Oh, look out, McGee. Red light. Stop.
Okay, okay.
Oh, McGee, look, there's Mr. Wilcox.
Huh? Where?
In that car that just pulled up beside us. Yoo-hoo, Mr. Wilcox.
What's he trying to say? I can't make out a word of it.
Well, no wonder. Our wind is closed. Let it down.
I can't. There's no handle on it.
Well, we've got to hear what he's saying. He's all excited about something.
Give me that monkey wrench. I'll open the window.
Here.
Thanks.
I say, traffic lights always remind me of Johnson's self-polishing glow coat. Stop and go. Stop worrying about your housework and go out to a movie. Stop that old-fashioned scrubbing and go modern the glow coat way. You get the idea, Fibber?
And to think I busted a window for this.
Well, you see, we want every housewife to know how to have a sparkling, easy-to-clean kitchen floor. Give your linoleum a facial treatment with Johnson's self-polishing glow coat, girls, and you'll get a permanent rave from your friends. Ask anybody that uses it, and you'll find...
Aha, saved by the bell.
Well, so long, folks.
You know, McGee, I think Mr. Wilcox is the most enthusiastic salesman I ever knew.
I'll say so. He's terrific in traffic.
Oh. Look, McGee, here comes a motorcycle policeman. Let's make a wish.
What do you mean, make a wish?
Well, that's the first star we've seen tonight.
All right, you. Pull over to the curb.
Gotta get them brakes fixed.
To say nothing of this cop.
Well, gangbuster, what, if anything, is on your mind, if any?
Get out of that car, both of you. No tricks. You're driving a stolen car.
I am not. This is my car. I reported it stolen, then I found I just forgot where I parked it.
Why, sure. Sure. We were going to call the police just as soon as we got home.
Sure.
That's what they all say. Now walk slowly ahead of me over to that call box. But I telephoned for the Trump wagon.
Now, wait a minute, officer. This is all a mistake. I'm Fibber McGee.
Oh, sure.
Sure.
And I'm Rudy Valley. Hi-ho, everybody.
Now, you'll be sorry for this, officer. Show him some identification, dearie.
Okay, I will. I show him my elk's tooth. Oh. Oh, shucks, I ain't got a thing with me. I left all my papers in my other suit.
Go on with you. Anybody with two suits wouldn't be wearing the one you got on. I'll come along with you, no more of your gaff.
Now, you listen here. I'll sue the whole Dad Ratted police force for this. What's your shield number, officer?
What?
We want your shield number.
Oh, the shield number is over the rainbow. We can hear it while we wait for the wagon.
All right, you. Step up to the desk.
Leap up to the desk.
You're charged with driving a stolen car.
Well, now listen. It's all a mistake, officer. That was our own car.
Look here. I'm Fibber McGee, and I'm a well-known citizen in this town.
How about you, madam? Who do you claim you are?
I'm Mrs. Fibber McGee.
Still sticking to your story, eh?
I've been stuck with that one for 25 years. And if you'll give me just 1 hour to find somebody to identify us, I'll prove it.
Yeah, all right, I'll give you a break. 1 hour.
Now, McGee, if I can't find anybody by midnight, I'll send over your pajamas.
Okay, you better make it my striped ones. Now, look here, my fine feathered friend. I don't want to threaten nobody, but if I ain't out of here inside of 2 hours...
What'll happen?
I wish I knew.
Go sit down.
Okay, bud.
Precinct station, Lieutenant Brorby. Yes? Oh, hello there. Oh, yeah. Sure. How's it with you? Oh, fine. Sure. Okay. What? Oh, that's pretty good. So long, Mert.
Hey, was that Mert? Hey, she can identify me.
Oh, she can, eh? How do you know Mert?
Why, shucks, I talk to her on the phone pretty near every day. Me and Mert are old pals.
Oh, you are.
I guess she just gets lonesome for somebody to talk. Hey, put that gun down. What did I do? I didn't...
That was my wife I was talking to.
Oh, well, I meant Mert, the telephone operator. Oh, forget it, bud. I just thought of just a slip of the... Oh,
hello there, Mr. Boomer.
Oh, there, Lieutenant. Just dropped in to make a little contribution to the police pension fund. Here you are, $1,000.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, Boomer, you can tell us...
Quiet there, you. The boys will appreciate this very much, Mr. Boomer. They've been working very hard lately. The bank robbery last night, you know.
Yes, I know. Terrible crime, wasn't it? And to think that rascals like that go unpunished, I hope.
Listen, Boomer, tell the lieutenant who I am, will you? I want to get out of here.
You know this man, Mr. Boomer?
Come to think of it, his face is familiar. There might have been something I ate. What does he say his name is?
Fibber McGee, and you know it.
McGee. Now, let me see. I have such a large circle of acquaintances, it makes me a little dizzy. Let me look in my address book. Oh, where did I put that address book? Have it right here someplace.
Come on, Boomer. Just because we never been warm friends is no reason to leave me in the cooler.
Don't be so crusty, shortening bread. Have my address book right here someplace. Address book. Here's a bottle of fingerprint remover. Removes fingerprints from loose diamonds. Also removes the diamonds. And sometimes the fingers. Here's a repossessed toupee. The owner was snatched bald-headed. Box of sachet powder tied up with a ragged shoestring. Ah, yes, lavender and old laces. Here's a slave bracelet. I set it free from a jewelry store night before last. Pair of loaded dice. Those are the bones I have a feeling in I'm going to win some money this evening. And a check for a short beer. Well, imagine that. No address book.
Oh, listen, Boomer, help me.
Now I'll have to start all over. Write down my friends' names. Write down their addresses. Wonder where I live myself. Oh, yes, right down my alley. Well, good day, Lieutenant. So long, Bill Hook.
Mr. Boomer certainly appreciates how hard we work. Every time there's a bank robbery, he donates a lot of money to the pension fund.
Oh, he does he? Well, if you can't make a simple deduction any better than that, I pity you on March 15th.
Oh, be quiet. I have work to do.
Yeah, you'll have more work to do when my wife gets back.
Here I am, dearie.
Oh, I see. Well, what luck, Molly?
Oh, everything's all right, McGee. I've got Mr. Gildersleeve with me.
Oh.
Come on in, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh. Thank you. And now, will you tell me what this is all about?
I didn't tell him what I wanted him for, dearie. I was afraid he wouldn't do it.
Oh, he'll do it all right. Won't you, Gildy, old man, old pal?
Do what? What is this?
How do you do, Mr. Gildersleeve? We've arrested this man on a charge of possessing a stolen car.
Oh, you have, eh? Yeah, whose car did he steal?
Belongs to someone named Fibber McGee.
Fibber McGee, huh?
Oh, cut it out, Gildersleeve. How can you laugh when I'm sitting here like a bird in a gilded cage?
Who reported this car stolen, Lieutenant?
It was Fibber McGee, sir.
Fibber McGee, huh?
But the funniest part of all, Mr. Gildersleeve, is this. The prisoner claims that he's Fibber McGee.
Now, Mr. Gildersleeve, that isn't neighborly.
Oh, come on, Gildersleeve. How can you forget me? Don't you remember the way I stole your dress suit last week?
What's that? You stole what?
You stay out of this. You're only a cop. It's none of your business what I stole.
Sorry, I didn't mean to be personal.
Now, Gildersleeve, go ahead and identify me.
Can you do it, sir?
Of course I can. Officer, this man is the most unreliable little prevaricator in the state. An irresponsible little squirt who's continually involved in all sorts of scrapes and messes. Incidentally, he's also Fibber McGee.
Well, thanks for identifying me, Gildersleeve. But you didn't have to be so specific.
Well, thank goodness. Now you can go home, dearie.
Not so fast, Mrs. McGee. The charge still stands against your husband until we straighten this out.
What?
But here's what I'll do. I know Mr. Gildersleeve personally. I'll release your husband in his custody. Will you take the responsibility, Mr. Gildersleeve?
My custody, eh? Yes, all right, I'll do it.
Thank you, sir. And remember, McGee, you are to report to Mr. Gildersleeve every morning and night.
Yes, sir.
And you're to obey any orders he may give you.
Yes, sir.
If you don't, you'll be remanded to jail at once.
Yes, sir.
You may go now.
Thanks, bud.
Oh, no, Mr. McGee, the other door, please. That door leads to the cell block.
I know it, but if it's a choice between a clink and a clunk, I'll take the clink. Lock me up. Folks, you've just heard the 232nd broadcast in the Johnson Wax series.
Hi, mister.
Oh. Don't bother me now, little girl. I'm making an announcement. We're going off the air.
Gee, for good?
No. just for tonight. And take that pleased expression off your face. Now go away. Ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, mister.
Oh, what do you want?
You know that candy rabbit you gave me for Christmas and remember?
Yeah, what about it?
Got any more?
No, I haven't. You think I always carry candy rabbits around with me?
Hmm?
I says, no, I haven't. What'd you do with the one I gave you Christmas?
Well, I carried it around and played with it and took it to school with me and slept with it and showed it to everybody and finally it got so darn dirty I had to eat it. So long, mister.
Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat, Racine, Wisconsin, inviting you all to join us again next Tuesday night at this same time. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's Fibber McGee and Molly from January 16th, 1940, starring Jim and Marion Jordan, as heard on NBC. Let's take a break. Then it's more on Hollywood 360.
More Hollywood 360 after these important messages.
Hi, Carl Amari here for Remind Magazine, America's monthly blast from the past. Each month, Remind Magazine focuses on a pop culture theme from the 1950s through the 1980s, covering a wide spectrum of topics from Marilyn Monroe to Marilyn Manson. In every 50-plus page issue of Remind Magazine, you'll find dozens of puzzles, movie posters, trivia contests, classic comics, crossword puzzles, vintage advertisements for products from days gone by, and much more. And every issue features my column, Radio 360, where I focus on a celebrity from Hollywood's golden age and write about his or her radio work. And next to my article is the monthly schedule of the classic radio shows I'll be playing each month, so you'll never miss your favorites. Remind Magazine is available at Barnes & Noble and Walmart stores throughout the country. But because I write for this magazine, I'll let you in on a little secret. You can get Remind Magazine for about 60% less than the newsstand price by ordering it online at remindmagazine.com. Visit remindmagazine.com and subscribe to
And now back to Hollywood 360 with Carl Amari.
Welcome back. I'm Carl Amari. This is Hollywood 360. Don't forget, go to our website, Hollywood360Radio.com. There's a store there with all kinds of fun stuff. And we have our podcast of last week's show. It's always a week behind podcast on Hollywood 360. It's time now for a tale well calculated to keep us in suspense. This stars Paul Lucas in Mr. Markheim, Antique Dealer, from May 11th, 1943. Here's Suspense.
This is the Man in Black, here again to introduce Columbia's program, Suspense. Heading our starring Hollywood cast this evening is Mr. Paul Lucas, and with him are Miss Heather Angel and Mr. Bramwell Fletcher. Story by John Dixon Carr, dealing with strange, very strange happenings in a London curio shop, and called Mr. Markham, Antique Dealer, is tonight's tale of suspense. If you've been with us on these Tuesday nights, you will know that suspense is compounded of mystery and suspicion, dangerous adventure. In this series are tales calculated to intrigue you, stir your nerves, to offer you a precarious situation, and then withhold the solution till the last possible moment. And so, with the performances of Heather Angel, Bramwell Fletcher, Paul Lucas as Mr. Markham, Antique Dealer, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
This is the story of a man who commits murder and gets away with it. Does the idea shock you? Do you believe that justice must always be done? But let's be honest with ourselves. You and I needn't be cynics to know that justice is very seldom done. Innocence flinches. Guilt is childlike and bland. Innocence is imposed upon. Guilt can encompass all things, even a successful murder. And I know this because I was the murderer, you say? Oh, no. Inquire at Scotland Yard. I was the victim. In Bond Street, not far from Piccadilly, there used to be an establishment, which in a less fashionable part of town would have been called a shop. On the windows, in letters as discreet as a visiting card, were the words, Charles Markham, Antique Dealer. Such a delightful fellow, Markham. Such a character. 30 years ago, yes, as long as that, this antique shop was a dingy place, despite deep carpets and crystal chandeliers. It rustled with the ticking of 100 clocks. It was shadowed by damascened armor and the loom of tall tapestries. And late one summer night, when the shutters were long closed on those windows, a four-wheeler drew up before the door in the gas-lit street.
That's all, cabby. You needn't wait.
Very good, miss. Good night.
Good night. He must be here. He must be. I won't go back to that place. I'll kill myself first.
Oh, look here, old man. You needn't... I beg your pardon.
And I beg yours. I'm not the person you were expecting, am I?
No, madam. As a matter of fact, I was expecting a police officer.
A police officer?
Oh, merely an old friend who often drops in for a talk and a drink.
You are Mr. Markham, aren't you?
Yes, my name is Markham. Can I be of any service to you?
I want to come in. I want to buy a present for somebody.
Now, really, madam, this is hardly the time.
Yes, I know it's late, but...
It's nearly 1 o'clock, madam. Surely tomorrow morning will be...
That'll be too late. This is a special occasion. It's a birthday present. That's it. A birthday present. I've got to deliver it before breakfast. And Sir George Lytle says this is the only place in London to buy antiques. Oh,
Sir George flatters me.
Won't you let me come in? Just for 5 minutes.
Well, under the circumstances, madam, I think it might be managed. Now, one moment while I put some lights on.
No, please. That one little light will be enough.
But you won't be able to see anything.
That doesn't matter. I'll trust to your judgment.
Just as you like. This way, madam.
What's that? That noise?
Oh, you mean the clocks, madam? There are more than 100 clocks in this room. I'm very fond of them.
Don't they get on your nerves? Ticking away together like a nightmare? Striking the hours together?
They don't strike together, madam. When the hour approaches, you will hear a musical din that lasts for some time. Might I interest you perhaps in a clock?
No. I hate them.
Now, all the same, this grandfather clock might amuse you.
What about it?
Observe the signature. Johannes Gutcarver, Londini, Facit A.D., 1752. You could see better, madam, if you raise that veil.
I'll keep my veil down, thanks.
Just as you please. But look at the clock. I open the glass face like this. Then I push the second hand forward like this, and...
1 o'clock and all's well. 1 o'clock and all's well.
What was that voice?
Only the clock, madam. Nothing more.
The clock spoke.
Clever, isn't it? A device of old John Carver. Anticipating Mr. Edison's gramophone by more than 100 years. Oh, but you don't like clocks.
No.
May I ask whether the present is for a lady or a gentleman?
It's for a man.
Oh, has he some knowledge of antiques?
Yeah. I mean...
Furniture, perhaps. Porcelain, bronzes, tapestries, weapons.
He might be very much interested in weapons.
Then yes. I imagine his name is Mr. Ronald Gilbert. Now, will you tell me, Miss Ray, why you really came here tonight?
So you know who I am.
Naturally. You are Miss Judith Ray. And why did you come here?
I wanted to see what sort of a man you actually were.
Oh, and have you found out?
No, but I won't go back to prison. I won't.
As you will. But since it's to be a business conference, Miss Ray... And I imagine it is.
Yes.
Well, then suppose we go into my office, here at the back of the shop. Will you precede me?
Thank you.
Oh, you must excuse the dust covers I've put on the chairs here. I'm leaving for a holiday tomorrow, and the shop will be closed.
That's the first portion of Suspense. Stick around for the conclusion.
Now back to the best in classic radio on Hollywood 360.
Time now for the conclusion to Suspense.
When I return next week, Miss Ray, I shall expect the amount requested. In cash, of course.
But I can't raise £2,000. You ought to know that.
Well, your fiancé could raise the money, I imagine.
Ron? Do you think I'd have Ron know where I've been? Or what I've been?
It's better than having his father learn it, surely. Now, sit down, Miss Ray.
I'd rather stand, thank you.
Now, that's a very foolish gesture. But the ladies will do it. They think it gives them dignity and shows the disdain of the poor blackmailer. You see, I make no bones about it. I am a blackmailer.
You seem rather proud of yourself.
Why not? I am the one person in England, perhaps in the world, who has made it a large-scale business.
Congratulations.
And what is all life but blackmail? The child says, if you don't give me that, I'll scream. The grown woman says, if you go on behaving like this, I will leave you. Your sex, Miss Ray, are blackmailers from the cradle.
You know, Charles Markham, I wonder...
Yes?
I wonder if anybody's ever hurt you very much.
Hurt me? What do you mean?
When you talk about the world and people in general, your face goes white under the eyes. You pick up that letter opener from the desk.
Not a letter opener, please, Miss Ray. A Medici dagger. 16th century work.
It isn't the money that really interests you.
I don't understand.
You hate the world. You just want to torture people, as you think you've been tortured. Isn't that so?
This is a very sharp dagger, Miss Ray. If I throw it down on the desk, it sticks.
Isn't it so, Charles Markham?
My motives, Miss Ray, aren't in question.
I wonder.
Whereas your motives are. Now, let me see. 10 years ago, in 1903, a certain girl called Letty Wilson, your real name, I believe, fell in love with a rather contemptible underworld character named Arthur Aker.
Please!
No humiliation was too great for her. She worked for him, lied for him, stole for him.
I was only 18. I didn't know what I was
doing. This girl, for a very shabby theft, was sentenced to 3 years hard labor at Holloway Prison. 5 months later, she escapes from prison and disappears. All these years afterwards, she appears in the West End as Miss Judith Ray, fashionable milliner.
Haven't I made up for it? Haven't I?
No.
For one mistake. After 10 years.
It's the way of the world, my dear. I didn't create it. And I'm forgetting the best part of the comedy. This paragon of virtue next falls in love with Mr. Ronald Gilbert, son of Major General Sir Edmund Gilbert. Such a respectable family, too.
Stop it, please.
Then, shall we say, £2,000?
Suppose I did raise the money. I don't know how, but suppose I did raise it.
Well?
What guarantee would I have that you wouldn't ask for still more money?
I probably shall ask for more money, Miss Ray. Well, that's my privilege as a blackmailer.
Then I'm never going to be free of you. Is that it?
Well, frankly, that's it.
Ah, unless I kill you, of course. What if I did kill you?
People have threatened it before, but they haven't meant it.
Maybe I mean it.
Well, we can easily test you out. There's a sharp knife stuck in the desk in front of you. I'm going to get up and deliberately turn my back on you. Like this.
Be careful, Charles Markham.
As a student of human nature, I'm curious. How much will you risk to keep this secret? Have you the courage to kill and risk hanging?
Yes, I think I have. What was that?
Now, aren't you glad you held back at the last moment, Miss Ray?
I said, what was that?
That, my dear, was the front doorbell. Probably my friend, Inspector Ross, from Wigmore Street Police Station. Come in, old man. Come on in. Make yourself comfortable. I'll be with you in a moment.
You wanted me to attack you, didn't you?
No, I was merely curious. And in any case, Miss Ray, it would be useless to kill me.
Useless? Why?
Because I shouldn't die.
Don't talk rot.
Oh, it's quite true. A man in my position must take certain precautions. If you killed me, I should be back to haunt you within half an hour. And I don't happen to be joking. Come in!
Now, look here, Martha.
Good Lord, Judith.
Ron!
Mr. Ronald Gilbert, as I live.
Ron, what are you doing here? He hasn't got anything against you, has he?
Speak up, Mr. Gilbert. Have I?
The fact is, Judith, I...
Look at him, Miss Ray. See how he changes color and twists his moustache and altogether resembles a boy caught in his mother's gem cupboard. Perfect picture of a gentleman being a gentleman.
Look here, Markham. I'm not very clever. You can always make a fool of me when you start talking, so let's stop talking. I've brought the money.
What money?
Oh, merely my fee for keeping quiet about you.
So you went to Ron, too. You told him about it.
Naturally. If possible, always sell your wares in two markets.
How much money?
Never mind, Judith. I hoped I could do this without your knowing.
How much money?
3,000. It's all I could raise.
Has he told you who I am and what I've been?
Look here, Judith. Who the devil cares who you are or what you've been? I happen to be in love with you. Never mind. Let's get out of here.
Ron, it's no good. He'll only come back for more money.
I know that, but what else can we do?
Nothing, I'm afraid.
Well, what's that knife doing there, stuck in the desk?
Nothing dangerous, I assure you.
No?
Merely a curio. I pick it up like this, I flip it down like this, and pick it up again. Miss Ray was very much interested in the dagger. Now, may I have that envelope with the money, please?
There you are. Take it.
Thank you. As I explained to Miss Ray, I'm leaving tomorrow for a holiday, hence the general disarray and the desk covers on the chairs. But before my departure, I'm glad we could settle this affair, as you would say, like gentlemen.
Before we clear out of here, Markham, there's just one favor I'd like to ask.
Well, of course, old man, ask away.
This is your job, I suppose. You can't help being what you are, but never again, as long as you live...
Well?
Never even say the word, gentlemen.
Be careful, Ron. Look at his face.
Tell me, Mr. Gilbert, how much money is in this envelope?
You heard what I said, £3,000.
Then take it back, my friend. I find we can't strike a bargain after all.
What do you mean?
Just what I say. Here is your money. You will now oblige me, both you and Miss Ray, by leaving my shop.
But what are you going to do?
Tomorrow morning, perhaps even tonight, I'm going to get in touch with the police, and I shall tell them where they can find Letty Wilson, alias Judith Ray.
You can't do that, Markham.
Oh, yes, he can. You hit him where it hurts.
£3,000, my friend, is not enough compensation for the way you talk. There is a way through the shop. Shall I escort you to the front door?
No.
Oh, So you prefer to stay here and make a fool of yourself?
You're not going to tell the police, Markham. I promise you that.
And how are you going to stop me?
With this.
Run! Put that gun away.
It's a funny thing, Judith. I felt a bit of a fool, you know, bringing this revolver along. But now I've got a use for it. Oh, yes, I've got a use for it.
Maybe the best thing would be to go into the street now and call a policeman.
You'll never get into the street, Markham.
Are you following me into the shop?
Yes.
So, both of you, it appears, came here under false pretenses. You said you wanted to pay me some money.
The money's still here, but you've lost your chance to get it.
And our dear Judith said she wanted to buy a present for you. I showed her this grandfather clock here, this talking clock.
Don't go a step beyond that clock, Markham. I warn you.
Nonsense, old man. You wouldn't dare shoot.
Wouldn't I?
No, and I'll call your bluff. One step. Two steps. I know your whole silly tribe, my friend. You wouldn't risk it. No, you wouldn't. What's happening to me?
Don't try and grab onto the clock, Markham. It won't save you.
You wouldn't risk your life. You wouldn't risk your family position. You wouldn't.
I had to do it, Judith. Don't you see? I had to do it.
Did you? Is he?
Oh, yes. Yes, he's done for. I tell you, I had to do it.
Shh, keep your voice down.
Why?
That shot sounded like the crack of doom. I wonder if anybody in the street heard it.
You mean the police?
Yes, Ron. What in heaven's name are we going to do?
Steady, steady. We'll find a way out.
Maybe he's not dead, Ron. Go and look at him.
He's dead, all right.
Please, Ron. Go and look at him. Well?
Shot through the heart. The bullet went clean through him and smashed the face of the grandfather clock. That's all I can see in this dim light.
This isn't happening to us. It can't be happening.
I've got to think, but it's hard to think. You see, Judith, I'm not in a rage any longer. I'm just numb and a little bit scared.
You're not going to give yourself up.
And have this whole thing made public? Not likely.
Wait a minute. There may be a way out.
What way?
He said he was going for a holiday, remember?
Well, suppose he did.
That gives us time. It means his absence won't be noticed. The shop will be closed. Nobody will come here for days, and certainly nobody will come here tonight, and...
What's that?
The police officer. I forgot the police officer.
What police officer?
A friend of Markham's. Inspector somebody or other from Wigmore Street. He's inspected here tonight.
Then we're finished.
No, Ronnie. We're not finished. He can't see anything out there. The shutters are down and the door is covered. Could you pick Markham up and carry him?
Yes, yes, I could. Why?
There must be a back way out of the shop, probably in the office. Hurry, Ron.
I don't like to touch him.
Hurry, Ron, please.
He's as heavy as a sack of meal. He seems to be looking straight at me.
I know. Everything here seems to have eyes and move a little in the shadow. Didn't you see the expression in Markham's eyes just before you...
No, I didn't.
You seem to be looking behind us or beyond us. I don't know how to describe it. And he said something, too, that scared me. He said he couldn't die. He said...
Close the door, quick. This police officer, Judith, he can't get into the shop, can he?
Of course he can. The front door isn't locked.
That's true. What's wrong with me, Judith? I came in there that way myself.
And there's no time to lock the front door now. Our only hope is through the back way. I thought I'd seen a back door and... Ah, there it is. Just a minute.
I've killed a man. That means I'm a murderer. A fraction of a second. One tick of a clock in there. And you change from an ordinary happy person into what I... Well, Judith, well?
I'm sorry, Ron. The door's locked.
Isn't there a key?
No.
Maybe in his pockets on a key ring.
There isn't time, Ron. I think I heard the front door open. Our visitor's coming in.
I've got it. The dust covers.
What?
Those white cloths that cover, that fit over the chairs. Look at them.
What on earth are you talking about?
We used to play a game when we were kids. Somebody sits in a big chair, you know. You fit the dust cover over him and nobody can tell he's sitting there. Don't you see, Judith? That's how we can hide Markham's body.
It might work if there's time.
There's got to be time. Take the big cover off that chair, the wing chair.
All right. Maybe there's a chance.
I'll fit him into it. Arms along the chair arms. feet pushed back. Now, put the cover back again and pull it round down his feet.
Don't let it touch his chest. The blood will show through.
There, that's got it. You can't see anything now, can you?
No, but, Ron.
Well?
What did you do with the gun?
The gun?
The gun you shot Markham with.
Oh, well, Judith, I put it down on the floor when I picked up his body.
Out in the other room?
Yes, yes, I'm afraid so. And it's too late now, Judith. The police are here.
What are you going to say?
I don't know. Trust your wits and try and brazen it out. Yes? Come in.
Good evening, Miss Ray. And good evening, Mr. Gilbert.
Charles Markham? You're Charles Markham?
Correct, Miss Ray. Why should that surprise you? Why do you look as though you were seeing a ghost?
Because we are seeing a ghost. If you're Charles Markham, whose body is...
Judith, be careful.
Body, Miss Ray. Did you say body?
Miss Ray's upset. She doesn't know what she's talking about.
If you killed me, I should be back to haunt you within half an hour. That's what he said.
I tell you, Miss Ray isn't herself. She had bad news today. A relative of hers died. I've been trying to make her feel better.
Indeed. Do you think it would make her feel better to bring her here?
I don't understand.
My dear sir, you are very welcome. But the situation is truly a little odd. I come in here and find you two looking as guilty as a pair of murderers if... in my private office in the middle of the night.
There's nothing odd about that. I wanted to buy Judith something.
It's 1 o'clock in the morning?
Yes.
Why not?
Well, may I ask how you managed to get in?
The front door was open. We just walked in.
If you wish to buy something, why not stay in the showroom? Why come to my office?
Well, hang it all. You don't think we wanted to steal anything, do you?
Well, that thought did occur to me. You see, there was nobody else here.
There's nobody here, Mr. Markham. Not a living soul.
Then you... didn't meet, by any chance, my brother.
Your brother?
Yes, my brother Robert. You couldn't have mistaken him if you had seen him. He looks so much like me that few people can tell us apart.
Oh, so that's it.
Poor Robert often deputizes for me. He's learned to act like me, think like me, and talk like me. But he doesn't like the work very much. Of course, you know what my work really is.
Is this part of the game? Are you trying to play cat and mouse?
Robert is an idealist. He thinks, poor fellow, that my profession is beneath contempt. But he acts the part and acts it well because I pay him. And I find it useful to have a double who will run risks for me. What have you done with his body?
We haven't done anything with him.
If you've killed Robert, my friend, you've committed a totally useless murder.
You don't see him here, do you?
No, but I see his handiwork.
Meaning what?
I've warned him many times about throwing a knife down on a polished desktop. Those scratches on the desk are fresh scratches. Of course, if you give me your word of honor that he's not here...
Of course, he's not here.
Well, in that case, all we can do is sit down and make ourselves comfortable. Will you sit there, Mr. Gilbert, and you, Miss Ray, in that wing chair by the window? What's wrong, Miss Ray? Why don't you sit down?
Because I prefer to stand, thank you.
Then perhaps you won't mind if I sit in the wing chair. It's a very comfortable one. My brother always says...
Don't sit down there for the love.
Oh. So that's it?
Yes. That's it.
It is rather a thick chair. I press against the dust cover and blood comes through. I lift the bottom of the dust cover and...
What's the use of going on with this? I killed him.
You admit that?
Yes, I admit it. But Judith had nothing to do with this. I swear she hadn't.
My telephone, you notice, is against the wall. I shall have to turn my back to you when I ring.
Ring? Where?
Wigmore Street Police Station.
Oh, no. Give him a chance. Please give him a chance.
Hello? Hello, operator. I want Regent 0586.
Yes, I won't let them take you on. I won't.
It's no good, Judith. I killed a man. I meant to kill him. That's all there is to it.
A very sensible attitude, my friend. And if the lady has any idea of flying at me with that knife, just notice what I've got here. A .32 revolver. One chamber fired. Picked up off the floor in that room where...
Hello? Hello, Wigmore Street Police Station.
For the last time, Hello? Mr. Markham, won't you give him a chance?
Be quiet, Miss Ray. May I speak to Inspector Ross, please?
Inspector Ross speaking. Oh, isn't that Mr. Markham?
Got it in one, Inspector. Charles Markham here. I understand you were going to drop in and see me tonight.
Well, I intended to, Mr. Markham, but I'm afraid I can't make it now.
Oh, why not? Anything wrong?
Only a robbery in Davies Street, but it's likely to be a long job. Sorry I can't get there.
Well, that's perfectly all right, Inspector. Because actually I rang up to make sure you wouldn't come here tonight. You see, I've got a lot of work to do. And I'm leaving for Eastbourne early tomorrow morning. Let's make it some other time, shall we?
Oh, glad to, Mr. Markham. No crime's being committed up your way, I suppose?
No, Inspector. It's as quiet as a grave. I've never known a more peaceful night. Goodbye.
Why did you do that?
Now, please, don't excite yourself, Miss Ray. Didn't you hear what I told the inspector?
Yes, but is this some more trickery?
Trickery? How can it be?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking you.
I should call it generous when I let my poor brother's death go unavenged.
You're not doing this without a reason.
Naturally not. But has it occurred to you, either of you, that I might not want my business dealings revealed in court?
What are you driving at?
And has it also occurred to you that a man's double, who looks exactly like him and shares all his secrets, may become a danger rather than an asset? He knows too much, he wants too much, and so...
I think I understand. You're glad he's dead.
Not glad, my dear. You shock my brotherly feelings, but definitely relieved.
Look here, you can't get away with this.
Get away with it, sir? Aren't you forgetting that you are the murderer?
And what are you going to do?
It is very simple. We three, in an unholy partnership, will dispose of Robert's body. Or would you rather hang?
He's got us, Ron. There's no other way.
But how can we dispose of the body? This seems worse than killing him. It's filthy, cold-blooded...
practical necessity. And as for disposing of the body, nothing is easier. We shall simply gather the... And so, as I said before, this is the story of a man who commits murder and gets away with it. Now, Ronald Gilbert looks back across the years and is still firmly convinced of his own guilt. But, of course, Gilbert never shot anybody. I was the man who committed the murder. Don't you remember? The bullet that killed my brother is supposed to have passed through his body and smashed the face of the grandfather clock. But that's an impossibility. The face of a grandfather clock is much higher than the heart of a man. You see, two shots were fired at the very same instant. Gilbert missed and smashed the clock face. I fired from the door of the office and did not miss. That was why my brother looked past those two. I went out by the back door, locked it, and reappeared at the front afterwards. It was not Robert Markham who died. I am Robert Markham. It was Charles who died that night. And I killed him to stop forever the wholesale blackmail that was poisoning the lives and blasting the hearts of 1,000 half-crazed people. His records I destroyed, his correspondence I burned. He is dead and gone. I have assumed his name and identity ever since. I committed a murder. And yet, if you sat on a jury, dare you say that you would condemn me? Come now, would you?
And so closes Mr. Markham, Antique Dealer, starring Paul Lucas with Heather Angel and Bramwell Fletcher. Tonight's tale of suspense. The producer of these broadcasts is William Spear, with Ted Bliss, the director, Lud Gluskin and Lucian Morrowick, conductor and composer, and John Dixon Carr, the author, collaborated on tonight's Suspense.
And that's Suspense from May 11th, 1943, with Mr. Markheim, Antique Dealer, starring Paul Lucas. Also in the cast, Heather Angel, along with Joseph Kearns and Bramwell Fletcher, as heard on CBS. Let's take a break, then it's more on Hollywood 360.
More Hollywood 360 after these important messages. And now back to Hollywood 360 with Carl Amari.
Next week, Alan Ladd stars in Box 13. Then it's Our Miss Brooks, Mr. President, The Chase, The Great Gildersleeve, and The Hall of Fantasy. We'll see you all next week right here on Hollywood 360.